Caution, learning in progress.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for listening to another episode of Smarter Every Season. This is the voice of Tyler Hubert. I am your part-time host. I share those responsibilities with a number of other people here on the podcast team. One to my right, one to my left. To my right, Nate Burnham's here. To my left, Drew Stout's here. We are coming fresh off of our spring updates where we try and drop an episode in weekly. And we're starting to get into the cadence that we have through the other 10 months out of the season where we have a episode every 2 weeks. We try to pull on a content expert depending on kind of what we're trying to talk about. We're going to get back into the swing of those. Nate, we're coming off of a spring where we changed things up a little bit. I think for a number of years it was just me and Hans Stutzman doing the every week spring update episodes. But you played both roles this year, right? You were an expert 1 week. You were a host some weeks, filling in my absence.
Yeah. It was a new experience. Those were a little bit more, let's get down what we want to talk about and then go. So it was fun time. But I think it's worth a call out for those who don't know. The reason why I got to step into that kind of host role is Tyler had a baby girl.
To be fair, I didn't.
Correct.
But let's give credit where credit's due.
But congratulations.
But I did get us to the hospital in time, which is really dad's primary function. Drew Stout's here. Drew, no kids but a dog this spring. That was challenging for you.
Yep. Kind of this spring started off coming out of dealer training season. Got a call from my wife that the dog may have made a little mess on the floor, which the Roomba then came and attempted to clean up, but it didn't go so well. So,
and where's that Roomba now, Drew?
It is far away from my house because I got tired of trying to get it back to working. So,
a valiant effort, though, I'm sure.
Yep.
The other voice you heard, and I didn't introduce him, is Eric Huber is here with us in studio. How's Eric?
We're doing good. This is a little different experience sitting in with all the sound equipment and kind of fun. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. Glad to have you. We were reminiscing about this. You've been on one other time, but I think it was over phone.
Yes.
So we're glad to have you here in studio. So here's what I kind of want to do. Again, we are coming off of having episodes every week. We're getting into our 2 week cadence. So this is a little bit of a transitional episode, I feel like. So what I wanted to do was, you hear enough kind of stories through the spring. Spring can be spring. It does spring things, right? It can kind of wear you down. There's challenging phone calls that pop up, but there's actually a lot of good that comes from it. And I wanted to highlight some of the good stories or the wins, the fun stories. So we had three different RMs that we pulled in and just shared some of those stories. Not super long, but just some fun things. And I thought that would kind of be a good on-ramp as we lead into kind of the summer sales season, if you will, or just summer in general. So I talked to Tyson Harris, who is an RM in the Pacific, so out west, and Gabe Scheidt, who is the Colorado and Western Kansas RM, and got some wins from them. I think Tyson shared three kind of quick stories. Gabe had a couple. But both just kind of fun, lighthearted things. And so if you guys are up for it, I'm going to play those. We'll play the transitional kind of tunage in between the two of them, and then we'll jump back into the studio because Eric's here to share some of his wins from the season. So if you guys will hang on with me, let's hear from Tyson and then from Gabe.
Yeah.
I am joined over the phone by Tyson Harris, who's an RM out in the Pacific West. Tyson, you've told me before that you basically kind of cover everything from Montana west, save Colorado. The reason that I wanted you to come on and talk about some wins is I just feel like the more I talk to you, the more unique your region is, that it helps me expand my brain past corn and soybeans here in central Illinois. You've got some fun stories of some wins from your territory over this last spring. Can you start with, there was a really cool story that you told me about a grower that upgraded his meters to ESETs. Can you share that?
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Tyler. I really appreciate the opportunity here to kind of highlight what's going on in the Pacific West. So last month I had a lunch with a nationally recognized grower. He's a packer and a shipper of high quality cantaloupe and honeydew melons in Firebaugh, California. And about a year ago, Alex Glucoy, he is with California Ag Solutions, our dealer in Southern California. He retrofitted this grower's planter to improve plant singulation and reduce the need for thinning because of double planting, which can end up ultimately leading to yield losses. And Alex worked with this grower to run his seeds through his John Deere meter, and then he retrofitted them with E-sets. And when the grower saw about a 15% improvement in seed singulation on the meter backs, he said it was a no-brainer for him at that time. And well, after this planting season, the grower sent us pictures of his fields with the melons at the two leaf stage. And a little quote I have here from the text message he sent, he said, I can say this is the first time I've ever seen a direct seeded melon field look like a field transplanted with a Ferrari transplanter. I haven't seen this since I was selling plants. It's absolutely beautiful. That was awesome to hear that from him. However, there was one problem. The grower called to tell Alex that while his stands looked great, he had expected savings and costs due to the improved singulation, but he found that his top line seed cost was nearly the same as the previous year. Well, a few hours later, the grower called back Alex to apologize. He hadn't realized until he reviewed his invoices that there had been a 10% increase in seed costs that year, and it turned out that the seed savings from the E-sets resulted in a 10% decrease in seed usage, directly offsetting the seed cost. To give you an idea for the significance of this, for a couple hundred dollars per row, the grower installed E-sets and reported a savings of $125,000 in seed across all the farms both owned and contracted. Yeah, pretty amazing.
That's awesome. I love that story. And what I think I really, really like about it too is we are a company that is fast to market, right? Likes to scratch the grower's itch for new technology. But E-sets have been around for 20 plus years. I mean, that goes way back to our kind of early days. And yet it's still something that's getting wins out there in the field. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it is great. I think it's a great example of where there's a lot of technology solutions that make a lot of sense for guys, but an easy way to kind of step into precision planting is with these sets, and you can see here for this grower that it had a significant payback for him.
Absolutely. You also had a really cool story around furrow force and reveal, and I'm kind of going off memory here, so forgive me if I butcher this, but is it around kind of water conservation?
Yeah, that's right, Tyler. So just a week ago, the Idaho Department of Water Resources issued the largest curtailment of water rights in the state history. And they're requiring junior groundwater rights holders that are pumping from the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer to shut off their water. This is going to affect about 500,000 acres of Idaho farmland. These are growers that have already done all the dirt work, have put in all their inputs, and now they're going to have to pull the water off of their fields. And Idaho's older senior water rights, they have priority over the newer junior water rights. So when water's scarce, basically junior rights are curtailed to protect the senior rights. And junior ground right holders are complying with mitigation plans to reduce the likelihood of curtailment. They're doing that by adopting farming practices that are increasing water conservation and improving efficiency. So this is where precision planting comes in. We're helping growers improve their water conservation practices. Any grower along the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer using precision planting's Reveal, Delta Force, and Furrow Force systems on their planter and seeding into Stell seed beds is demonstrating a commitment to water conservation. Actually, our dealer, Brent Hillman at Progressive Crop Systems in Shelley, Idaho, has been leading this effort since, 2019, when agreements around growers adopting conservation efforts were more actively pursued to ensure senior water rights are protected. So Brent and his growers, they're seeing significant success utilizing precision planting system. This spring, I met with 45 growers at Brent's dealership to discuss the use of Reveal, Delta Force, Furrow Force, and I heard firsthand from growers about the benefits of these systems. So one, they're seeing increased soil moisture, They're getting earlier germination that's leading to better root establishment, and it's improving the drought tolerance of their corn. And then, of course, they're decreasing inputs by saving on spring tillage passes. The reports from them are indicating that they are experiencing no yield loss, and in most cases have yields increased due to a more precise planting technique. So this is a huge success for growers, both groundwater and surface water users, that are reducing operation costs, conserving soil moisture, and increasing yield simultaneously. And that's the power of Reveal. And out here in the West, a lot of times what happens over the winter is our soils will crust up. And by using Reveal, we can go into that soil, into a stale seed bed. We can push that dry crust off. We can open up a really nice furrow, and then we can come back with furrow force and close that and reset soil density and lock that moisture in and make sure that we have good movement throughout the soil, keeping a consistent density. So that's a really exciting story there about how precision planting is helping growers comply with water efficiency requirements and also being able to increase yields and decrease costs all at the same time.
I love it. You also have a really good story. Give me an idea. What is kind of the ratio of what you see as far as like air seeder type systems in your territory versus planter systems?
When we're out here in the West, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of acres of corn. But when we get into small grains production, like canola, wheat, barley, we're talking about millions of acres of ground. So the ratio of planters to air seeders, we definitely see a lot more air seeders or grain drills in this region than we typically would see of planters. And so that actually reminds me, if you give me just a minute, kind of another quick success story from this spring. So yeah, last year we relaunched Clarity, and that's our granular sensing system for small grains, volumetric air seeders. And in northern Idaho and eastern Washington, there's a region called the Palouse, and it's known for its highly fertile dryland soil, but it's also known for its undulating terrain and steep slopes that are downright frightening in some cases. So growers in the area are producing oil seeds there by planting canola. And the agronomic research has shown that optimized plant populations that are evenly distributed reduce soil moisture loss, weed pressures, disease susceptibility from fungus, and costs associated with overseeding. But the challenge to achieving this optimized plant population and distribution is setting the wind volume on the air seeder. Too much wind can result in seeds being blown out of the trench, while too little wind leads to uneven distribution across the drill and potentially plugging the air seeder. So last year, Felipe Zavala, one of our dealers at Vantage Northwest, retrofitted a grower's air seeder in the Palouse there with Clarity. And the grower noticed significant variation across his drill, and he was actually a little skeptical of the discrepancies there. So this winter, we went up with the laptop. We simulated GPS, tapped into his 9RX, and injected the signal. And then we ran the cart and drill. But before doing that, we placed bags on the ends of the seed runs to measure the output. And the variability was confirmed right down to the ounce of what we were seeing on the application rates and the variability across Clarity. So the grower is now using Clarity to adjust his tractor speed and increase his wind speed when there's an increased demand on his air system on those steep side hills, as well as to slow down the speed of the tractor as needed. So it's a great story there where growers are taking our technology, they're getting visibility to the issues that they're having across their drill in terms of variance in the industry. We'll call this a coefficient of variance across the drill. And then they can make adjustments to the air seeder either on wind speed or baffle position or slowing down the tractor so that they can keep up with the demands that are there, ultimately leading to where we have more uniform plant densities and populations that helps us to sustain or increase yields and reduce susceptibility to fungus and things like that that can build in really dense canopies.
That is really, really cool. It is funny, too, how much, I think a grower can kind of look at, maybe even what we've talked about at winter conference or what they've heard and still be skeptical. And to an extent that, I kind of understand that as a consumer. And how much in the ag industry seeing it is believing. And I guess I give you credit for, going out there and having some ingenuity and hooking up a GPS system or simulating GPS and proving to this guy, no, this isn't snake oil, right? This is, there's real value here. And what that probably converts to, I don't know if you've seen this with this particular grower, is then they kind of move into an advocate for you. You know what I mean? Once they've seen it and they see that it works, the power of a couple good testimonials like that, then they start to become an advocate, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, it really is. It's difficult when you're just looking at your air seeder and you're seeing the depletion of the tank and that everything looks right, but to see the uniformity across the drill, that's more difficult to see, especially at time of planting. So it's really understandable to have a grower look back and say, well, I was supposed to put down 100 pounds of product here per acre, and well, that looks about right in the tank. And then say, well, I don't think I have that uneven distribution. But when you actually get the data and it transitions from an opinion to a data set, and then you can use that data to troubleshoot and optimize the drill and ultimately decrease chemical usage costs when we get into those areas on side hills where we have really dense populations on the lower side of the drill. And then also we're decreasing chemical costs when we get in on the upper side of the drill where plant populations thin out and we get weed pressures there. So really great technology, and it is great to see growers adopt that and ultimately be able to improve their operation as a result.
Tyson, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you jumping on. I look forward to hearing more stories about wins coming from your territory in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks again for the opportunity, Tyler. I sure appreciate it.
You bet. I'm joined now over the phone by Gabe Scheidt. Gabe has actually been on the podcast. It was probably October or so of last year. He is the region manager for the Colorado Western Kansas region. Gabe, you've told me actually a lot of stories from your spring. All of them are good. All of them entertaining. I wanted you to come on and tell some more stories because your energy and the way you tell stories is fun. But you have two really good ones from this year. The first one, let's just say that it starts with kind of a shortcoming, maybe if you will, from an OEM and not from an OEM that we have a planter agreement with. And we'll just leave it at that. But can you tell that story?
Sure. So the grower purchases himself a new to him field ready planter, right? And we've heard that term, right? So this planter is new to him. He's all excited. And it had some precision on it in the form of a clean sweep and a clean sweep compressor, right? ESETs as well. So he gets his planter and gets out to the farm, and things are going okay for a little bit. And then after a while, he starts to have some problems with his compressor. So he calls back to the dealership who sold him the unit, and they send a guy back out. And it wasn't until about 4.5 of technician hours later and untold rolls of electrical tape and splices that they modified the clean sweep compressor to tie into the ISO in order to trick the compressor to stay on long enough for him to plant. And that worked until it didn't. So when he called the company back up, they said, yeah, we'll come back out and we'll fix it again. But, you know, this is on your dime because it was working when we left. And, of course, he got a little frustrated, understandably so. And he used a little thing called Dealer Locator. You heard of that thing?
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. So he found a local representative of Precision Planting Premier Network and made a phone call. And one of my dealers went out there to take a look at things and replaced the MacGyvered fix with a proper install and had him up and going quality in about an hour and a half. So that was pretty sweet. And before he left, you know, I'm pretty proud of the fact that he actually decided to ride around with the grower for a pass or two to make sure there's no other questions.
Cool.
And lo and behold, I found yet another problem that was really about to cost that grower a lot of money. Grower didn't know what singulators were. And they went back to take a look at that, and the field-ready planters, singulators, weren't. So suffice to say that little experience right there saved that grower a tremendous amount of heartache. And it, not only that, it established a trust or a union between those guys, to where that dealer has yet another customer they'll be calling him for his needs. So
that's awesome.
I love stories like that.
Me too. My favorite part of that story is when you told me they fixed the splices, because as somebody in product support, when I hear the word splice, there's a shiver that goes up my spine.
You know, do you have one of those little buttons on there where you just like bleep out bad words? So if somebody says splice.
You have another really cool story. It was really about how a dealer of yours came to become a dealer that I just think is a really cool story about the relational side of ag. And I want to highlight, because you and I have talked a little bit about him, I think Zach Vincent, I'll name drop him, has done a really good job as a dealer in a short amount of time. Can you talk about now a kind of a full calendar year for him as a dealer, how he became a precision planting dealer?
Yeah, this is actually, absolutely. So I've making a loop to the territory, right? Make a 2 or 3 day loop, come back home towards the family. And that return trip back to the family, you kind of get highway hypnosis. You're kind of looking straight ahead and you have a mission. And the mission is to get home to the wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm driving, I look up to my left a little bit. Something caught my eye and I see a guy out in the field plant, right? And I'm slowing down a little bit because there's some road construction ahead. As I'm slowing down, I keep looking at this guy and I wave my hand, you know, to say, hello, how are you? I see you, you know, whatnot. And the wave I got back did not look happy. Right. Kept going forward. The road construction hit one of those little temporary stoplights in the middle of the road. And rather than sitting there waiting untold time for permission to move forward, I don't know why, but for some reason I put it in reverse, turned around the middle of the highway, drove back in and whipped into that field. As I whip in that field, a little white F10 rolls up to me and says, what you doing here? I says, my name's Gabe with Precision Planting. I was driving by, thought I'd stop by to see how that guy's doing. And he looks at me and says, today is not the day for that. And I said, having some problems? And he said, you could say that. I said, then today is the perfect day. And so he goes, okay. I put it in drive. I drove into the field and parked my pickup in a place where he was kind of forced to stop. And I got out of the pickup and waited. And, of course, frustrated, who's this guy, you know, parking in front of my tractor. He slams it in the park and gets out of the tractor cab and comes down and, you know, I'm wearing my shirt and introduced myself and, hey, how's it going? Drove by. You didn't look very happy. Is there anything I can help you with? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Come over here. He starts asking questions and kind of wanting to chew butt. And I took the time to talk through and fix the problems. And you saw that tension just release. And it was just that he hadn't been taught fully or he didn't fully understand how the systems were working in unison. By the end of the conversation, right, I asked him, hey, do you know anybody around here? You know, who do you work with? You know, if you know of anybody around here that'd like to be a dealer. And I hand him the last business card in my wallet. It was a business card that's been in there for a little too long, right? There's dirt on it. The corners are folded over, you know, but it's only one. And I hand that to him. We shake hands. And he goes on his way. Gives me a big old wave as I say goodbye. The next day, I get a phone call from a guy. And he says, hey, I got your number from a buddy of mine. I wonder if we could talk about being a dealer.
Oh, I love it.
Come to find out that grower had taken and a picture of my business card. He had Snapchatted it and said, this guy just stopped by on the side of the road and helped me fix my problems. I never met him before. If anybody's looking to start a business with a cool company, give this guy a call. And Zach Vincent with Flying V Agri Services was the gentleman on the other end of that phone line. And it's kind of neat, you know, there was no reason for me to stop. I don't even really remember making the conscious decision to turn around the middle of the highway to talk to that grower. But it's kind of neat how things happen for a reason,
mm-hmm.
right? And how something that simple results in such a relationship, you know, with a new dealer in a growing region. So kind of a fun one there.
Absolutely. That's really, really cool. Gabe, thank you so much for taking the time to jump on and tell a couple really cool stories. Now, again, that was last year with Zach. He's one full year in, but I assume he's having fun as a precision dealer.
He is. That guy's the definition of fun. he's out there proactively. He's actually planting the road rows for guys for free in exchange for them putting up his field sign.
I love it.
So he's doing a good job of spreading the word in his area. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent marketing. Gabe, thank you again so much for jumping on.
My pleasure.
All right, Tyler Hubert back here in studio. If you remember, Nate Burnham's with me, Drew Stout's with me, Eric Hubert is across the way. Eric, you had some wins to share. I'm not going to ask you to limit it just to Symphony, but I think you had some around Symphony that you wanted to share. So what were, and by the way, you're an RM in, would we say Eastern Illinois? Would that technically
East,
be the?
East Central.
Okay.
Yep, East Central. So south side of Chicago, so Will County, just to to give the perspective there. Haven't sold any 2020s into Chicago yet. Haven't figured that out.
Yeah, thank you for putting yet.
Yeah, yeah, kind of down to Danville area, so Champaign-ish latitude, and then over to the Tazewell County area. So 13 little counties in a very dense pocket of corn and soybeans.
What were some of your favorite wins this spring?
I think overall, it's funny with Symphony, the big thing for me was overall how quiet it was, really. In some ways, talking to one dealer of mine, I said, what'd the grower think? He said, great. He says, I don't know how to describe it outside of, you know, he's out spraying a pretty contoured cut-up field, and it's just kind of stress-free. You just kind of run. It turns on when it needs to. It turns off when it needs to. Had another dealer, had three different systems out. One of my favorite stories coming back from him was he said, we're never going to get it on our own family farm because my uncle runs a sprayer. He's not a technology guy. But funny enough, they're tied in pretty close with a co-op down in the area, and it was the manager of the co-op that actually talked the uncle into PWM in general.
Okay.
Said, no, you got to do this. He says, the savings are real. It's not just an overlap thing, but when you're taking off with standard diaphragms, you're pouring out a bunch of extra as you go. And that particular co-op was saying that they're guessing about a 10% savings in chemical by going to PWM right off of the top, which is a lot more generous than what we usually do. And we just look for an acres planted with swath versus acres spray. So that was kind of interesting. What was funny then in that scenario is this particular dealer said, we had our issue with can jumpers and getting some seepage into those can jumpers and creating some can errors across the NCMs. And this was partway through the season, and so the nephew comes out to the uncle who's running Symphony and says, hey, I tell you what, says, I know this can be frustrating. Why don't I just turn it back to a normal deer style sprayer like we had before. We can open up our check valves and just go and can get it out of your hair. And the uncle said, no, I don't want to spray without it. So he went from hesitant at first to, even though he was having some issues, now I think R&D and support handled it the right way, putting out a short-term fix and a long-term fix, gave him some confidence. But once he had tasted it, he says, no, you can't have it back. So those I think are the simple wins so far from the Symphony side. Some cool stuff with cameras that I've gotten to see as well, but that's the Symphony piece.
We don't have to talk just Symphony. Is there anything from the planter side?
Yeah, so from the planter world, I think the big takeaway from me for me this spring being, this is the spring that wouldn't end. That I think is the common feeling from most of the nation, even us here in perfect central Illinois. This is the spring that wouldn't end. What was amazing to me was really two things: the ability to fine tune a machine with the products that we provide, whether it is Delta Force tiptoeing across the field or furrow force setting it right for condition, the ability to lift and tiptoe or to apply and firm is incredible, absolutely incredible. But the big thing that jumped out at me, and this is something that I try to encourage my dealers to, is the product we sell is only as good as the dealer's coaching on how to use it. There are a couple scenarios where maybe we're on the edge of, should we really be out here or not? And in a normal year, I would have said, you know what we need is 36 hours. It was getting late enough in some of these scenarios, it's like, no, we need to go. We need to get something in, and we think we can actually set this thing to make it happen. So the first, probably most impactful scenario to me was from what seemed like a failure last year. This was out El Paso area.
Okay.
And was out post-spring walking a field that had wide open trenches, corn that's about V4, and that corn is green with yellow streaks and purpling at the bottom. And this customer had Delta Force and Furrow Force. It's not what it's supposed to look like, mm-hmm. right? And so we get out and we start to walk. And what's painful in this particular scenario is this particular grower is also running Furrow Jet, running about 7 gallons of a 722.5 through the wings, and the purple in the corn says that the corn is phosphorus deficient, even though we put a bunch of extra in. The reason that is because the trench was wide open and the nodal roots that feed on that phosphorus can't grow through thin air. We've got rootless corn in spots in the field, especially in the lower ground. So this was a very painful, pretty ugly scenario. What we were able to walk through with the grower then last year was, okay, the tool is capable. However, there was something about how the tool that was set that wasn't quite right. And so we made a commitment. We said, we're going to come out with you again this coming spring, and we'd like to come help see the scenario. We want to help set this with you. What was great was last spring, it was pretty damp, kind of wetter in the window that this grower was planting. But then in June, the conversation we were having last year was, this looks like the start of the drought of 2012. June turned so dry mm-hmm. that we were in trouble. So if you think about what happened last year, you've got damp soil. This particular grower, my assumption was probably running a little heavier than he should have been with Delta Force. Typically, guys in conventional till around here, 120, 130-pound target to start. This is pretty heavy soil. This was I did a little research on it. This was El Paso Flanagan soil. Very high organic matter, very high water holding capacity. If you think about what happens is you go across it, it might look like it was closed from the top, but then we dried out so thoroughly, when that soil dries out, it shrinks and it opens back up. So this spring, we get out, similar scenario, out with the dealer, and he and I are on the headlands. We're starting to set this planter, and what we see very quickly is it's iffy, but I get it. We're trying to set the planter. We get out and we start to lighten things up. So the first adjustment that we make is Delta Force. What I've learned is if I can get the gauge wheel load set correctly, the closing system's job is easier. Start with the gauge wheel normally. Make sure the row cleaner is turning up front, obviously, and engaged well. So reveal up front, Delta Force, Furrow Force in the back. We start to dig, and we were already in a quote-unquote lighter target. We were around 100 pounds. What I tend to do is try to go too far one direction. Because if I go too far one direction first, I can always go back, and I've got a reference point. That was too far. Let's come back in between. Mm-hmm. So what we ended up doing is we lightened him up to a 60-pound target on Delta Force. I have never set Delta Force that light ever. Never have I done that. Typically, we'd say we don't want to lose ground contact, but if I've got more than sufficient furrow moisture, which we did in this case, the reason we're concerned about inconsistent depth is because we're changing moisture. In this case, that was not the situation. We're trying to tiptoe. So 60 pounds on Delta Force. On the backside then with Furrow Force, what we ended up doing is I thought, hey, we want to go light on Furrow Force too. So instead of 30 pounds down, we lightened it up to 15.
Why?
Because, okay,
I agree with you.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So what I've learned with Furrow Force is what actually does the closing is how much engagement we have with the first stage wheels. It is the concavity of those first stage wheels with any of the camber that comes in along with it, the toe and camber of those wheels. So first thing we did is we looked at his Gen 3. We knew from the load cells on FurrowForce that we did have weight on the rear wheels. Therefore, we know we should be getting full shatter. And then when we go to dig that seat, if we still see a slot, that says we need to go deeper. Mm-hmm. Because the reason we have a slot is that we're not deep enough with our first stage wheels. So that was the idea. We knew we had weight back there, but we were trying to tiptoe. So in my mind, it's, hey, let's lighten this up, which I think in some soils would have been the right call. The dealer made a really good observation, though, is if you can imagine about the 3.5 inches, whatever it is, between those first stage wheels, it was so sticky that we were actually pulling that lobe up in between. And what we had is you could see the firmness on either side and then this kind of loose lobe in between. And we said, ooh, that's not going to be good. So we actually started to firm back up. I think we ended up 25 pounds or so. Here's the thing. We didn't have a magic number. All we knew is we didn't want to leave this loose lobe of soil in the middle that could dry out.
Right.
So we firmed it back down on the backside. Then to check ourselves, what we did is we could see a little rise in the field. You know, elevation maybe went up 10, 15 feet, whatever it was. And so I said, I bet if we go up to the top of that the high, you know, the quote-unquote rise, we don't have hills in Illinois, we just have bumps. We went to the top of the bump, and we came up there, and I thought, surely this is going to be better conditions. It was just as tacky up there. Mm. It is not so good. The top inch is about right. Underneath that, I could kind of jab my digging tool down into it, pull up, and I could shoot a ribbon with my hand. Mm. So normally, we shouldn't be doing this. Right now, we're going to go ahead, and we're going to give this a shot. We were able to get some pretty good shatter across. We dug in. We looked at the seed. We didn't see a slot. We felt like the density was so to where the chute was going to be able to push up and out. And what was fun to me, and I've actually got slides made of this now, where I can look at the corn from last year that had this big, wide-open slot because we had compressed the soil instead of tiptoeing across. This season, 2 weeks out there, I'm looking at V3 corn, and you can't see a slot anywhere. Cool. Just gorgeous. Beautiful. That's all awesome. The way across. Same tools last year, but it was the knowledge of how to dig and how to begin to find the right spot for the seed. So to me, that was the big win.
I think, first of all, it's good to let everybody know we do have marginal conditions sometimes.
Absolutely,
in Central Illinois.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I also think that right there is how we precision planting win.
That's right.
Right? Is that there are, I have certainly heard before, like, well, I grow 200 and some odd bushel corn without any of that stuff. I'm sure it's been done. I'm sure you have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about in the years where it's not fit to do that?
That's absolutely
and,
right.
And honestly, Eric, I think kind of Central Illinois had a couple of those years back to back, that it's been a couple wetter years. When you're in that kind of marginal ground and you have different sticks to hit with, right? When you have different plays in the playbook, that's where I think we as a company really win. What we offer really wins.
It's absolutely right. It is not the product that we sell alone. It is that in combination with the knowledge that the dealer brings to help the customer properly set the equipment that they're using. And then learning that 3 years ago, the settings were different than last year. And the settings last year were different than the settings this year.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is actually the fun part, is trying to teach. I can't give you a magic number, but what I can give you is what you're looking for when you're digging. And here's the knobs you can turn, the levers you can pull to try to increase your chances of success.
And I think what you said there, too, there's probably a setting that 6 out of 10 years, it's the one you need to be on. We can get you to 10 out of 10, right? With some education, like you said, we can get you to 10 out of 10. That's the goal. I know it may not be as easy as you push this button, it does X. But if we can get you to the point where there's an understanding, like you say, then you can maximize the tool.
And to the dealer that might be listening and saying, but I don't know what that setting is, you may not know the setting, but I would wager that you know what you're looking for when you're digging. And so the way that I've challenged guys to this, I was riding with one grower, and we're going through the field. Soybean planter had Delta Force on it, and I asked him, I said, hey, why are you running that target? And he said, "Wait, is it wrong?" And I said, "I don't know. I haven't got out and dug. I'm going to get out and dig." He pushes in the clutch. We get out. He was set at 80 pounds. We get out and we dig and we start to look. And I said, "Well, what do you think about the soil over the top of the seat?" "Ah, seems kind of loose." "No, what do you think we should do?" "We should probably go heavier." "Oh, okay, let's do that." So we hop back in the cab and he goes from 80 to 130. And we run a little ways and we get out and we start digging. And we look and I said, "Well, what do you think?" He said, "It still looks kind of loose. But it's not bad." I said, "I agree. What do you think?" "Well, let's go heavier." We went to 180. And we ran another pass. We didn't know exactly which one was the right one, but now what we've got is we've actually got emergence checks going in each one. And I know for a fact, what's pretty cool, where we were the lightest setting at 80, we have the fewest plants up. Mm. Where we were at 130, I've got the most plants up. And where we were at 180, it was better than 80, but it wasn't as good as 130.
Okay.
And we could have predicted it that day. So that is my encouragement to a dealer. "I'm not sure." Okay. Do three settings that find your extreme, look at what you're trying to find in between, and that's what you're trying to do every single time. There's not a magic bullet, but you do know what you're looking for.
Right. I agree. I love it. Eric, thanks for being here, man. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me in. This is fun.
Yeah. It was good stories. Nate, Drew, thank you guys for jumping on. This, like we kind of talked about in the opening, is kind of the transition for us into the every 2 week episode. So I'm not going to give away what we're going to be talking about in a couple weeks. That might be partially because I'm not 100% sure, but we don't have to get into that right now. So thank you guys very much for being here. And for everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. I look forward to coming to you again in a couple weeks with another new episode.